We dedicate this class today on the topic of the Agadah, says the stories of Har Sinai in the Shabbat, in the Gemara in Shabbat 86b through 89b. We dedicate it to the memory of the family of Andrew Siegel, who were lost in the Holocaust, to Bela Siegel, David Siegel, Eliyahu Siegel, Menashe Siegel, Mordechai Siegel, and Moshe Siegel, Yosef Menachem Siegel, Yuta Siegel, that's Bela Bas Yosef Menachem HaKohen, David Ben Yosef Menachem HaKohen, Eliyahu Ben Yosef Menachem HaKohen, Menashe Ben Yosef Menachem HaKohen, Mordechai Ben Yosef Menachem HaKohen, Moshe Ben Yosef Menachem HaKohen, and also Yosef and Yuta Bas Chana. And Yizichron Baruch, may the memory continue to be a blessing in their families in New Jersey, in Israel, Memphis, throughout the world, should continue to be an inspiration and a nechama to their souls as they continue in their tradition. I'm going to share with you the screen in just a moment, where we can take a look at the Agadahs there in the stories, the Midrashim, that are found in Shabbat, in Talmud and Shabbat. And based on that, we can understand something about the dual nature of receiving the Torah. If we look in the Torah right away, we see that there's some sort of dual nature. On the one hand, as we see in a moment in Rashi, the Jews were clamoring, they wanted to get closer. Big Balta, they had to fence off the mountain, Lotiga Boyan. Be careful, don't get close. We're gonna stone you. We're going to shoot an arrow at you if you get too close to Mount Sinai. The Jews were chomping at the bit. They wanted to come to Sinai. Like today, the Jews who want to go back to Shul, they're crazy about it. They didn't want to go back to Shul. On the other hand, we have the idea that the Berat HaImanu, after the Ten Commandments were given, the Jews said, no, you speak in Moim Anachnu Eish HaGolah Od Vamatnu. If we see the fire anymore, we can't take it. This is too much. A human being can't possibly live with all the awesomeness of God and the awesome experience of Mount Sinai and the Torah. It's too much. So there's a dual nature of the Torah. It's awesome, and yet it's something we love. We have the love and we have the fear. We love the Torah and we fear the Torah all at the same time. This is brought out very much in various Agadahs. We're going to go through much of the Agadah between 86 and 89, and then look at some interesting comments on it as well. The different aspects can be seen first in the first Agadah that we come across. Agadah means the part of the Talmud that's not law. It says it was the third day. That the third day they got the Torah. And what was it the third day? He says, well, it was third day since the time when the Vayasha Moshe Divrei Amashem Hashem. It says in the Brisa that on the one hand, it says Moshe retorted the words, reported the words of the people to God. And then later it says, Vayageh Moshe, not that he responded, but that he told the words of Moshe, of the people to God. So he told or he responded. Why the difference? So the Medrash goes on. It says as follows: Ma Amar Lo Kosh Baruch Hu Moshe Amar Lo Moshe Yisrael. What kind of correspondence? What's going on? Why is Moshe giving? He's going back and forth. He's like an intermediary, telling the words of Moshe to God, God to Moshe, the Jews to Hashem. What's going on? So Zumitzus Hagbala. Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says he told him, don't get too close. Rabbi Omer, that's Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, he says, B'tchila Perish Onsha. He says in the beginning, he said, look, these are the punishments. Yashem Moshe, Moshe responded, meaning Edvarim Shemeshivin, Meshavavin, Dator Shaladam. Moshe told the Jews things that make people feel like rebellious. They feel like, oh, the Torah, all these laws, we can't take it. And in the end, he explained the schar, the great reward for the Torah. They said, Vayaged Moshe. Told the Jews Vayaged implies in later Hebrew to stretch. It stretches out your heart. It opens your heart and makes your heart melt. Like Agadah. We're talking about Agadata, Hagadah. Like these are, you know, nice stories, make you feel good. But some people say the opposite. At first, when Moshe told God what the Jews said, he explained he had explained to the Jews, Yashev is the word tshuva means like people, that's something that makes you feel good. He explained, like I gave Moshe, he explained the Torah in a way that was very difficult. Like a gid, a sinew is very hard. You know, if you're trying to eat a steak and you bump into a sinew, it's very hard. So we have here, right away in this, I got into this story about Mount Sinai, that there were two aspects to what Moshe and God and the people were discussing. One is that the Torah it's very appealing. There's a lot of reward for the Torah. And the other is that it's very hard. It makes you rebellious when you hear it. What? I have to do these things. If I don't do them, I'm in trouble. So there are two aspects of Torah. One aspect, that which is hard to hear. The other is Moshech Libosh Adam. It pulls your heart. And after all, as you mentioned the other day in another class, it reminds us of the Rashi in Chumash. I'm just going to put you on mute for a second. It reminds us of the Rashi in Chumash, where Rashi said that, why did God have to speak to the Beit Yaakov and the Bnei Yisrael? What's the difference of Beit Yaakov and the Bnei Yisrael? He says, well, there are things you speak gently to the women, and then there are hard things like the punishments and some of the details that you have to tell to the men in a hard way. So forget about the gender roles, but very simply, there are two aspects of Torah. There's this soft stuff, the mushy stuff, the midrashim that everybody enjoys, the reward, the benefits, the good stuff nobody can deny. And then there's other parts of Torah that are hard, like wormwood. They're hard, like a sinew. They're difficult. Then we see that there are different attitudes to the Torah. We're talking about the dual nature of Torah. So we find another, we're going through the Agadah and Shabbat. We're finding this dual attitude. So number one, the words themselves have different aspects. And then our attitude, our reaction to the Torah can also be two different ways. It says the Jews encamped at the foot of the mountain. And the famous words of Avdimi Barchama Barchasa, it shows you that God, when the Jews stood at the foot of the mountain, it doesn't just mean that they stood at the foot of the mountain and they looked at a beautiful mountain. No, it means that God took the mountain, lifted it off the ground, held it over their head and said, if you accept the Torah, terrific. And if not, I am going to shamdei tevurasim. I'm going to take the mountain, put you underneath it, and you'll all be buried underneath this mountain. And by the way, Rav Acha says, this is the Modor Rabba L'Raisa. He says, we can get out of it. If God ever asks you, hey, how come we don't keep the Torah? He says, look, I didn't agree to this thing. You forced it on me. And Rav says, well, don't worry. Eventually the Jews accepted it. The days of Purim, we were so happy to be saved. We kimu v'kiblu, the Jews finally accepted the Torah. Many years later, after that, we were already thrown out of Israel. We accepted the Torah willingly. So we see this aspect of the Torah that we were forced to accept the Torah. But as we'll see in Tosfot and many different authorities, they say, what? The Jews are forced to accept the Torah. Doesn't everybody know that the Jews said, Nasa Manishma? They said, well, we will do it, and then we'll find out about it later. So we have these two, a dual element. On the one hand, the Jews were forced to get the Torah. On the other hand, the Jews said, sure, bring it on. Well, whatever you say, we will do. Then we have the experience. Experientially, there were two aspects to it. Amar Chizkiah, the great Amor Chizkiah, he said, "My dichti, what does it mean? Shamayim mishpatadin eretz yarov shakta. He told us the laws from the heavens, and then the land feared, and it was quiet. If it feared, why was it so peaceful? If it was peaceful, why was it fearful? So which one was it? So ela b'tchila yarov zov shakta. First, the world worried, and then the world was quiet. Why was it afraid? Like Reish Lakish, one of the great rabbis in Israel, said, "My dichtiv ayiv erev ayivoker." Why did Yom Hashishi? Every Friday night we say Yom Hashishi. Why Hashishi? The sixth day. Which one? The sixth day when the Jews got the Torah on the sixth day of Sivan tonight. Malamin shisna kosh bo gu ma'isa breishis v'amalehem. Im Yisrael mekadlim atura atem mekaimim im lav ani machzir zom tov avo. God made the Torah on condition that sixth day of Sivan, when the Jews would accept the Torah, would take place. And if not, then God would return the world to nothingness. So the world was scared. It's scary to think about the Torah, because without the Torah, there's no purpose of the world. We believe that the purpose of the world is that people should be good as described in the Torah. And not only that, they should have a relationship with God. They should know that the one who created the world is good and he wants things to be good for us because he is good. The proof that he's good is that he created us because he didn't need us. So we have this idea that there was fear and there was silence. The world was happy to get the Torah. But once the Jews got the Torah, they were happy. But at first they were scared because they said, if we don't accept it, the world will fall apart because the whole world is there for us to accept the Torah. Then we have another Agadah. I'm showing you that all these stories in the Gemara, all these Agadahs about Mount Sinai, bring out the dual element of the Torah. Darash Reb Simoy, one of the great Darshans, he said the following, Shoshik Dimi Sol Nasa Benishma, when the Jews said, we will do the Torah, and then we'll find out later what it says in the Torah. We'll just do it. And it's very, very, very magnanimous of the Jews to do that. So Bo Shishim Ribo Mamal Hesharis, a whole army of 600,000 angels corresponding to the number of Jews. And Koshulo Shniksor, each angel came to each Jew and put a crown on his head. One because the Jews said they would accept it, and one because the Jews said they would listen to it. So that we got a crown for this. Okay, so this shows you that the Jews were very willing to accept the Torah. This is the aspect that the Jews were excited to accept the Torah. And it was such a wonderful thing. The angels thought we deserved a crown for this. But came in Shechotu Yisrael, when the Jews sinned, then the angels came. Malachi Chavala, bad angels came, and they took the crowns off of us. And it says a very strange pasuk that the Jews took off their adornments from Mount Sinai. Well, the Jews were wearing jewelry at Mount Sinai. The people had nose rings, and they took them off. It's not clear, but the Midrash says it was the crown that they had gotten. Notice why the angels are so excited about this idea, because angels are there. They're really messengers. Malach means messenger. Malach is a messenger. So they're there to do the message of the messenger work of God. Whatever God says, that's what they do. So they don't ask questions. So when the Jews did the same thing, they said, whoa, you guys are like angels. They put a crown on us. Now, I'm Rabbi Chama Bachina. The other rabbi we mentioned before, he said, Bechoriv Tanu, Bechoriv Poker, they took it, they put on their crowns at Sinai, and they took them off at Sinai as well when they sinned with the golden calf. And Rabbi Yochanan says, Kulum Zacha Moshe ben Atlan. Moshe had these crowns. He took the crowns away from them, and he wore it. And Rish Lakish says, God one day will give us back these crowns. One day, Simchas Olam will get the old-time Simcha from Mount Sinai. We'll get it back in the end of days. Some say that on Shabbos, we wear this crown again. On Shabbos, maybe we'll see why later. So at Mount Sinai, before the golden calf, we accepted the Torah so lovingly that we were crowned. It was a time of great glory. It wasn't a time of fear. It was a time of glory. But before we saw, it was also a time of fear. This is a dual aspect of the receiving the Torah and of the Torah itself. To show how great it was that we accepted the Torah so willingly, so lovingly, we said we'd do it, and then we find out the details later. So a voice came from heaven when we did that, says Rabbi Lazar. Migilam raze levana lo shemach hasher mishtamshim bo. This is the secret of the angels, to just do what God says. As we say in the Psalms, Baruch Hashem alacha gibor kor kol sidvar lishmo b'kol dvar. Blessed is God, the angels who are true heroes of power, they do God's will. They listen to God's will. He says, first they do it, and then they listen. So that we're just like angels. Rabbi Chama Bachrina, we had before, he said, why does it say, why does it say in the Song of Songs that we are like an apple in the orchard? Why are the Jews compared to a tapuach, to an apple? It's probably a citrus fruit, which smells good. Tapuach in modern Hebrew means apple. Rabbi Soloveitchik thought it was more of a citrus. Lo melecha matapuach ze priyo kodem lalav. When you have certain types of fruits, citrus fruits or some kind, something like that, whatever the Talmud refers to as tapuach, it works like this. First, the leaves come, and then the fruit comes second. So to the Jews, we said we do it, which is like the leaves, and we find out why later, that's the actual fruit. So it was amazing that the Jews did this. So on the one hand, God forced us to accept the Torah. He said, if you don't accept the Torah, I'm going to bury you on this mountain. On the other hand, Jews accepted it so lovingly. God, the angels praised us for so lovingly accepting the Torah. So Tosfot, who are the masters of contradiction, say there's a contradiction here. God held a mountain over them like a barrel, but they had already said, we will do and we will listen. The previous verse says, we already said we accept it. So he says, he answers, perhaps they retracted when they saw the great fire. First they say, oh, sure, we'll do it. And they said, wait a second, we're not going to do it. It's too awesome. It's too difficult. And then God forced them and said, no, too bad. You have to accept the Torah. That's why we have a world. So the Jews will accept the Torah on behalf of the world. And we had no choice. The Tosfos mentions also that that we're going to say later that their souls went out when we got the Torah. We were so shocked. It's like someone takes a breath, and like a baby sometimes takes a breath, and you say, "Wake up!" You know, you gotta exhale. You know, so we lost our breath when we were given the Torah, etc. Now. Then the Agadah goes on, and again we're trying to show that the Agadah, the stories in the Talmud about Sinai, show that there is a dual aspect to the Torah. We're going to come back to that question later. How could the Jews have said they accept it if God forced it? So we gave Tosfos' answer. He says maybe they changed their mind. We'll give other answers later. Go back to the Gemara. So Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amar Rabbi Yonasan, a powerful couple who always discuss these Agadah, these non-legal matters in the Talmud. What does it mean? He says, you really hearten me. You've ravished me. Oh, I'm so taken with you, my beloved, my bride. With one eye, you made me so excited. So he says, what do you mean one eye? He says, at first with one eye, and then later with two eyes. What does that mean? So Ula, one of the great rabbis who went back and forth between Israel and Babylonia, he says, he says, this alludes to the fact that the Jews were it's so shameful that while we were at the chuppah, we were already committing acts of infidelity. So, so let's skip that part for now. Moving along. Rabbi Yochanan says, my nativ, Hashem yitun omer v'asot tzvarav. What does it mean? The Lord gives the word. The women that proclaim the tidings are a great host. What does that mean? So he says, "Kol divra v'divra v'shiyatzim nechlag v'shivu l'shonos." Every word that God said came out in 70 languages. In other words, the Torah is for the Jews, but it was given universally because really the Jews are here for humanity. We're here to fix the whole world. And so it's an interesting thing about Shavuos. It's a personal holiday just for the Jews, but of course, we got the Torah so we could bring it as a light to the nations. So it's kind of an interesting thing. So therefore, it had to have been given originally with all the languages involved. Hanan Bal Papa says, why is the Torah compared to royal things, a Nagid, like Shmuel HaNagid, a famous person? So, just like a great officer he has life and death in his hands. You know, he's powerful politician. He can do things. So too, the Torah is very powerful. It can smash things. It's like a hammer. It has the power of giving life, but also of giving death, the dual aspect of Torah. It can give life, it can make our lives so meaningful, and it can also give death. It can ruin us, because if we didn't have so many laws, we wouldn't be in such bad trouble. But so many laws, it's very easy to violate a lot of things. So just think about it. Is it good to get the Torah, or is it bad to get the Torah? Why are we celebrating Shavuot? Is it we're so happy that we have 613 ways in which we could mess up? Is that good? As a matter of fact, in the Talmud, there was a rabbi, Rav Yosef, who said, you know, he's blind. He says, I don't know. I'm not sure if blind people have to do all the mitzvot, but I would rather not have to do them because then I'll just volunteer to do them. So why are we celebrating Shavuos? Because we have to? Shavuos, we became forced to do the mitzvot? Wouldn't it be better to just volunteer to do the mitzvot? And what's so good about having so many mitzvot? Aren't we doomed? We had a lecture from Meir Soloveitchik. He said that in his interfaith studies, he discovered that there's a passage by Paul where he thinks that the Jews are doomed because we have too many mitzvot. Is that the Jewish attitude? What's going on? So we need to understand the dual aspect, the good and the bad and the ugly of the Torah. And that's what Rava also brings out, this dual aspect. Rava, one of the greatest Talmudists ever. My meaning ba some of the chay. Those who go the right way with the Torah, it becomes a potion for life. But those who go to the left, they go the wrong way with the Torah, becomes a potion for death. Every word that God uttered, God gave us two crowns, as we said. Rabbi Shua ben Levi, another great master of Agadah, also Halacha, he said, quotes a verse in the Song of Songs, which of course is very loving. He says that we are like a bundle of myrrh in between the breasts, like we're like a perfume that women wear in different places. So what does that mean? That even though we give God a hard time, like myrrh, more can be like maror, and we're rebellious, so God still hugs us and embraces us in his breast anyway. It also says in the Song of Songs, which is a metaphor for God and the Jewish people, that we are like a cluster of certain spices, and we dwell in the vineyards of Engedi, you know, beautiful place, a beautiful oasis in the Negev. So Misha Kol Shalom Mechaperli Alavon Gedi, the God atones for me for the golden calf. Etc. So there's a tremendously loving relationship of God and the Jewish people. These stories about Sinai bring out the loving nature of God giving us the Torah. But continuing this theme of the spices and the myrrh and from the Song of Songs, so Amar Rabbi Shua ben Levi, this great master of Midrash and also Halacha in the first generation of Talmud in Israel, he said, L'chayav karugat abosem, that your cheeks are like rows of spices. It's like you went to a spice orchard. What does that mean? That for every word that God said, the whole world filled with spices. This is one of the aspects of Torah. Torah is like a beautiful perfume. But before we said, it was like a threat to kill us. But he says, so the Talmud asks a funny question. If the whole world fills with spice, with a beautiful smell of, let's say, Chanel number 5, when every word he said, the whole world filled with Chanel. He says, yeah, but then the next word, where could the smell go? It would get all mixed up. The next one smelled like cinnamon. So, but the whole world already smells like the perfume. So what's going to happen? So God figured it out. He was able to get it done. You know, God can do special things. But that's, I don't really understand that, but that's an interesting question. Rabbi Shua ben Levi continues. He says, every word that God said, their souls went out. Now, if you think about it, that's the opposite of what he just said. On the one hand, he said, the Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said, he's one of the great mystics, one of the great pious people. He used to hang out with Elijah the prophet. He said, on the one hand, every word that God said, it was like spices, like perfume. It was so amazing. But on the other hand, every word that God said, we died. We were like, huh? You mean we have to do that? You mean we can't do this? We die. Our souls went out. It's like something breathtaking, right? It takes away your breath. And so he says, if we died the first time, how do we ever get the second one? Because the rabbis say we heard at least two of them. Some say we heard the whole thing. He says, God brought us back to life. He brought the dew from heaven, and he brought us back to life each time. So the Torah revived us. Each word revived us, and it killed us too. And Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi continues, it was so frightening. The Jews ran away. They stood far away. He said, how far was it? 12 miles. I don't know, miles or whatever measurements they used in those days. But it was like 12 measures of space. In other words, I don't know, 12 miles, 5 miles. We ran 5 miles away. It was a 10K. We were so scared. And the angels had to bring us back. And they quote some verse, which I think is was in the Psalms, that the angels had to bring us back in a friendly kind of way. They had to bring us back. So Rabbi Shua ben Levi brings out the idea that on the one hand, the Torah was frightful. On the other hand, the Torah was had a beautiful fragrance. It was pungent. It was beautiful. It was amazing. Then if we ask, you know, what is Mount Sinai? What's the nature of Sinai, that particular place where we were? Does that have a dual nature? So a certain rabbi once asked once asked Rav Kahana, one of the great rabbis, had an interesting smile. Mishmi Allah Amai Har Sinai. He says, you know, what is Har Sinai? What does that mean? Sinai, a funny word. It's not really Hebrew. Amale Harsh and Nazuma Nisim Yisrael. It's a mountain of Nisim, of miracles. Because the word Nais is a Hebrew word. Sinai doesn't really sound like any Hebrew word, but Nais is a Hebrew word. So he says, it doesn't say Nais, it says Sin. It's the opposite. So he says, well, all right, Siman Tov, it's a good sign. It's a Siman Tov, a Mazel Tov. He says, that's not the word. Siman has a mem in it. Sinai doesn't have a mem in it. So he said, well, this reminds me, I once asked a Chassid a question on the subway, and every answer he gave, I said, that doesn't make any sense. We were using a translator. I would say it to him in English, he would tell it to him in Yiddish. He'd come back to me, I said, but that doesn't make any sense. Anyway, so the rabbi said, well, he says, why don't you ask this other rabbi? He's good at these kind of things. And Rav Chisda, so they asked, what is Mount Sinai? So it's a mountain where the nations began to sinna, to hate us. It was at this moment that the Gentiles hated us. And you ask, really? So it's a mountain of miracles. It's a mountain of a Siman Tov Mazel Tov. And it's a mountain where the Gentiles started to hate us. What does that mean? So it's very interesting. A simple answer is, oh, you know what? From that moment on, the Gentiles were jealous. This is the moment of chosenness. So the nations say, what do you mean? What are you, the chosen nation? You're some kind of big shot. How could you think such a thing? But on the other hand, you want to take a shout out at Malcolm? Why did the Gentiles start? Why did anti-Semitism begin with Mount Sinai? Want to give it a shot?
Well, it's always the aspect of the chosen people.
Yes.
You know, the jealousy aspect, why were we chosen? You know, it's envy.
Good, good. Another idea, in addition to that, is the following. Some people say, you know why Gentiles really want to get rid of us? Not everybody, of course, obviously most people in America, some of the very nice people. But there are a lot of anti-Semites out there, even in America. So why the great hatred? So it comes out very much with, you know, the most extreme cases, you really see it. Someone like a Hitler. What would it mean to chase down every Jew in Poland and Russia, try to find every Jew and kill them? Why? Because if there are Jews, then there's a Torah. And if there's a Torah, then there's morality. And if there's morality, then I can't do whatever I want to do. So who are the biggest party poopers in the whole world? The Jews. Because we have this story that there's a moral God and he has certain demands from us. They say, no, God's just, God is love and he loves us and that's all. And that's good enough. You don't have to do anything. You just have to love God. Believe in God's good enough. So the Jews come and say, no, there are very specific things you have to do. And if not, you're in big trouble. So the Jews, not because we're Jews, because we represent a certain idea. So at this moment, when we got the laws, the world couldn't stand this anymore. So it's very interesting. On the one hand, the Torah is full of spices. On the other hand, it was at that moment, tremendous hatred came in the world. The dual nature of Mount Sinai. Good. He also makes a drush about other names of Mount Sinai. Good. And then... Har Chorev, it's also called Chorev. Destruction came on the world, nations. Okay. Now we go back to that question. Question was asked by Tosfot. Oh, wait a second. You can't have it both ways. You can't say that the Jews accepted the Torah willingly, lovingly, and they said they do it before they even hear about it. And then they also say that we're forced to do it. So which one is it? So there was a Yosef, Rav Yosef Chaim of Baghdad. He wrote one of the Shulchan Aruchs for Sfardim, the Ben Ish Chai. And he lived in Baghdad in the 19th century. Well, we Ashkenazic snobs, we sometimes think that, you know, all the great pious sages come from the Europe. There were great sages in Baghdad as well. So it was a great city. It was a magnificent city. And he was one of the great scholars. So he says, I'll tell you, maybe when we accepted the Torah, we accepted it like the Karaites. He said, oh, sure. Love your neighbor. Don't kill anybody. Sounds great. We accept it. Oh, but you have all these laws and the details and all that. No. The Talmud, 5,000 pages. We don't accept that part. So for that part, we needed some help, God had to force us to accept that as well. The Madani Yomtov, Rabbi Yomtov Lubin Heller, great scholar who commented on the Mishnah. So he says, you know, on Shabbos, we always say, we always talk about God gave us with love. If you look at the Kiddush tonight, it doesn't say love. But Shabbos, we always talk about love. So he says, why? Because before Mount Sinai, we went to Mara. And Mara, we get the man. When we got the man, we said, oh, this is great. We get free fruit. Everybody's happy. We get a free Kiddush. There's no question. So Shabbos was told to us at Mara when we got the man. So we were happy. We accepted that with love. So that's given with love. But the rest of the mitzvot were not accepted with love. And that was different. And that's why we say, v'shamru v'nei Yisrael Shabbos. The Jews kept the Shabbos. The Jews were happy to keep Shabbos. That was no problem. The Jews have a love affair with Shabbos. That's not the problem. The problem is all the other mitzvot the Jews don't accept. Even today, most traditional Jews make Kiddush. And they, you know, we can complain about how people observe Shabbos. But probably in Israel, most people, they have Friday night dinner. They make Kiddush. You know, people say Shabbat Shalom. So that's also part of Shabbos, is recognizing today is not Saturday. It's not Friday night. It's Shabbos. Okay. Now, there were many other answers. I'm believing there's a whole literature about this. But Meir Arik was one of the great geniuses about 100 years ago. He said, we were forced, but it's known that every Jew in their heart wants to do what's right. So it's true, we were forced. But really, when we said we would do it, that expressed our true desire. The Sfat Emet, I often quote the Gerei Rebbe, he says, you know, if you tell me I have to keep Shabbos kosher, okay, fine. But if someone puts a gun to my head and says, here, turn this light on Shabbos or I'll kill you, I'd like to live. So he says, okay, when it comes to life comes fruit before anything, except idolatry, immorality, and murder. And those three things, you have to die rather than do it. So the Jews said, that I don't accept. We have to die for the Torah? That's going too far. So God says, no, you're going to die right here if you don't accept it. God forced us to accept that part of the Torah, which is more difficult. You know, a Jew moves to Israel, he has to fight in the army. A lot of us, you know, hesitate to do that. It's not so easy. Give credit to the Israelis. They go in the army, they put their life on the line, they put their children's life on the line. That's something that unbelievable. You know, it's a force in America to think like that. So that God had to force us to do. Although there's an idea that Jews lovingly accept that. Alecha uragim kol yom, we're happy to die for God whenever we need to. Hopefully we don't have to, but if we need to. There's a midrash that uses a halachic trick to explain this question. I didn't see someone else quoted the midrash. I don't know where it is. When we came to get the Torah, he forced us to get the Torah. So he said, forced? That sounds like, you'll forgive me, but it sounds like rape. God raped us. He said, I'm bigger. I'm stronger. I say you accept the Torah. And if not, I don't care. And you're marrying me, right? Sinai was a marriage where some Spartan read the ketubah. They have like a pretend ketubah they read tomorrow for the marriage of God and the Jewish people. So he said, what kind of marriage is this? It was a forced marriage. That's crazy. So he says, you have to know about the laws of forced marriage. The old law in the Torah worked like this. It's very, very strange for us as modern people, but this is the way it worked in those days. If a woman was raped, she was finished. She had a terrible reputation and everybody blamed it on her. And then in the Middle East, sometimes they would kill you. You were raped? Okay, we'll kill you. You're a shame for the family. So the Torah says, no, none of this nonsense. If you were raped, then that guy, he thought you were beautiful, he wanted to rape you. Guess what? He has to be married to you. He can never divorce you. Again, in modern mind, this is like a horror story. But if you don't want to marry him, it's fine. But if she feels desperate that no one's going to marry her now, and the only one's going to marry is this guy, the rapist, so then he has to marry her, and he can never divorce her. She can divorce him, but she doesn't have to marry her. But he can never divorce her. So therefore, God forced us to accept the Torah. He forced us to marry him. You know why? Because then they can never get divorced. So that's the message. Moving along, the Maharal says that in his book, Netzach Yisrael, he says, what do you mean? God forced us. We said we'd do it. Why did he have to force us? So the answer is that if we would have accepted the Torah, said, well, the Torah, sure, we'll accept it, no problem. He says, then, from then on, Jews would think, you know, I accepted it, but, you know, today I don't accept it. You know, that was before I found out about the Israeli army or about, you know, dying because of idolatry. But right now, I'm done with it. I accepted it, now I reject it. He says, no. You're forced to accept it, you can never reject it. Then there's the Ritva, the Spanish commentator from Middle Ages. He says, he says, I know you people. You accept it today, but maybe tomorrow you're going to reject it. So he says, I force you now in case you change your mind later. And this he quotes from the Tosfot, which apparently the Tosfot are Rush, where he says that maybe he was afraid that they would not just back out in the Middle Ages, 100 years later, 1,000 years later, they would back out right there. When they saw the great fire and the lightning and the thunder, maybe they back out. So he forced them, says, look, no matter what happens over here, you're accepting this, whether you like it or not. The Haflor of Chaim Pinchas Horowitz said the following. He says, when, if we would have accepted the Torah, so God would say, oh, that's so nice, you know, you love me, I love you, that's so beautiful. But of course, I only love you because you love me. But, you know, sometimes the husband gets really mad at the wife, so the wife says, well, if you're so mean and you don't love me, then I don't love you either. So he says, no. This marriage is a very weird marriage. It's not based on whether you love me. I don't care. So even if I force you and you say, oh, I don't love you. This is terrible. I want to get me out of here. I want to run 5 miles away. So he says, well, guess what? This marriage is not based on whether you like it or not. This marriage is a different kind of marriage. It's a bris. It's a covenant forever. And if we don't like it, we're still locked into it. God doesn't love us because we love him. He loves us because he just loves us. It's a love based on nothing, like a mother for a child. The child is born, so you love the mother loves the baby. Does the baby love the mother? Who cares? The mother loves the baby. If the boy becomes an axe murderer, probably she still loves him anyway. Why? Because it's not dependent on anything. Same thing with God and the Jewish people. Maram Shik gives another answer. He lived, I think, in the 19th century. So he said, So he says, the main thing a person should do is worship God. We should know who we are. We should know our place. We're just human beings. We're not so great. So when we got the Torah, we might have thought, oh, I'm getting the Torah. I'm very choshuv. I'm very important. So he said, no. I want you to accept the Torah with humility. By forcing them to accept the Torah, we said, oh, we have to accept the Torah. We're nothing. We're under the threat of death. So the Jews accepted the Torah out of humility. So no, never could a Jew say, oh, I'm a religious Jew. I'm so important. No, that's not the way to do it. We accept the Torah with humility. Another view, I couldn't see who said this. He says as follows. Moshe accepted the Torah willingly. The rest of the Jews were forced to accept it. I'm not sure how to work that out. One of this Hasidic commentaries, Bat Ayin, I'm not sure when he lived exactly, he said, usually what you have to do is, if you want to be holy, you got to get rid of all your bad habits. You know, you got to throw away the bottle, you got to throw away all the drugs, and then you can be straight and you can go on a good path. So what do the Jews do? They said, no. We don't want to get rid of any of the bad stuff. But we'll do it. Any of the positive commandments. We'll make kiddush. We'll take a lulav. We'll listen to the shofar. We'll give tzedakah. Anything positive. That's all good stuff. That's fun stuff. We'll do it. And as far as the negative things, you know, that's a little bit negative. We don't like that so much. Like Americans, we like positive things. Very positive people. So he says, no, you guys made a mistake. You want to focus just on the positive. So he forced them and he said, no, you got to switch it around. You can't just focus on, if you want to get to something good, you have to shed the bad. You have to focus on the bad as well. You have to listen when God says, don't do it. You have to listen to that as well. And that's the dual aspect of Torah, the positive and the negative. 365 negative and 248 positive. Rabbi Uriel Sharkey is a wonderful teacher in Machon Meir in Israel. He teaches at Machon Herzog too. He said, why do we read Ruth on Shavuos? So we had four classes on Shavuos. We talked about it. There's so many things to say about Shavuos. Such a wonderful book. But he said something new I didn't even think of. He says, you know why we read the book of Ruth on Shavuos? It's a corrective. What's a corrective? He says, we get to the, what would happen on Shavuos? We got the Torah. What's the Torah? Book of laws. What do the Christians say about the Torah? Oh, it's the God of law. You know, we're under the law. It's terrible to be under the law. You know, under the law, to keep all these laws, and if you don't keep the laws, God doesn't love you, and you know it's no good. Which is not what we said. We said God loves you all the time. But that one can get the impression, a Jew, a learned Jew, could get the impression the Torah is miserable. The Torah is just misery. It's just one law after the other. If you don't do this, you're in trouble. If you do this, you're in trouble. There's so many things. It's terrible. And that's why every time we learn, we always quote the Mishnah at the end of Makos. God wanted to give us credit. God wanted to give us merit. The Fikri Berlin Torah mitzvot. That's why he gave us so many mitzvot. As it says, God wanted to make us righteous. That's why he made Torah so big. He gave us so many mitzvot so a Jew could get it right. One Jew could be outstanding in Shabbos. One Jew could be outstanding in kosher. One Jew could be outstanding in charity. One Jew could be outstanding in loving his neighbor. There's so many opportunities. God loves us. That's why he gave us so many mitzvot. So he says, we read the book of Ruth to tell us, you think the Torah is about harshness? No. The Torah is about love. It's about Ruth. You know how she became Jewish? Because she was kind and nice like Abraham. And she worried about her dead husband. She worried about her mother-in-law. And Boaz worried about her, and Naomi worried about Ruth, and everybody in the whole town worried about all of them. And it's kindness. That's what the Torah is all about. Don't think that the Torah has these dual aspects. There's the good side, the bad side, the perfume, the aromatic side of the Torah, and then there's the awesome and negative side of the Torah. No, there aren't two sides. It's all love. Even the negative side is also positive. And that's the story of Ruth also. That it was such a terrible life. Naomi had such a terrible life. Ruth had such a terrible life. He said, that's just what meets the eye. Underneath it all, can be redeemed. Even after death, there can be redemption. There can be salvation. There can be hope. And it's not what you think. So that explains the following Midrash. Midrash says when Moshe, it's a little different than the Talmud. We skip the passage in the Talmud. It talks about Moshe going to heaven and the angels objected to him getting the Torah. Wasn't relevant. But this Midrash, Rabbah in Shmot, about that story is relevant to our topic. As Rabbi Sharkey said, quoted this Midrash. He said like this, Moshe went up to the mountain and he stole the Torah from the heavens. He took it like captive. So then the angels came and they said, wait a second. He says, we're going to get this guy. We're going to kill him. Moshe Rabbeinu, we're going to wipe him out. You can't take the Torah from up here. It belongs up here. So God made Avraham look like, he made Moshe look like Avraham. He gave him a face like Abraham. So Hashem said to the angels, aren't you embarrassed? You're going to kill this guy? Didn't you go and eat in his house and enjoy his hospitality? So the angels said, you're right. Okay, he can take the Torah. He can take the Torah. So what does that mean? So Rav Sharkey quoted from a Hasidic source. He said, if the Torah doesn't have the face of Avraham, it's not Torah. In order for the Torah to be Torah, it has to have the face of kindness. And that's what Ruth taught us. She reminded us that Torah, the Jewish people, the Jewish nation, the land of Israel, it's all about kindness. And when the Jews refound their kindness, they were able to bring about the redemption and bring David and to save us all. So on the one hand, our class today was about the dual nature of Torah. Torah has this awesome aspect that's just so scary. You want to take a 5K mile run in the opposite direction. And then on the other hand, Torah is balsamic. Torah is aromatic. Torah is enlivening. It gives us life. And Torah is chesed. But in the end, which element is dominant? So we read the book of Ruth as if to say, you know what? In the end, it's something like Ruth the convert. You want to run toward it, not away from it. It's something that's all about kindness. It's all about chesed. Even the more difficult aspect that seems so scary, it's all about love. It's all about the marriage of God and the Jewish people. It's all about the love story of the Song of Songs, of the love of God and the Jewish people. It's not conditional love. It's not, doesn't depend on whether we're good or we're bad or we can't handle it. We can't handle it. God loves us no matter what. And it's this story of how God has loved us, even with the golden calf, even with our thousands of years of sinfulness and rebelliousness. It's ultimately a story of love. So the dual nature of receiving the Torah, indeed, I've shown that many of the Agadas, many of the stories from 86b to 89b, three pages of Talmud, many of the stories, I edited out some of the things were not relevant, many of these stories about the dual nature of Torah, but in the end, I believe that it's clear that the dominant aspect is that God wanted to give us credit and merit. He meant things for good for us, and that's why he gave us so many mitzvahs. So that's the conclusion of my lecture, and today's lecture should be in memory, again, for the Ilui Nishmas, memory of the beloved souls of the Siegel family, and it should be the merit of their entire family who were lost in the Holocaust. And we thank Erica Siegel family for sponsoring this beautiful lecture in their memory. Any questions or comments? Yehuda? Malcolm?
Well, firstly, Rabbi, thank you for bringing all those wonderful stories together and your sources together. That was wonderful. I always am amazed at how somehow the rabbis and of course Moshe Rabbeinu, how he was a conduit for God. You know, he received we became a civilized society as Jews. We lived to a standard. It's a moral ethic we try to ascribe to. We all try to be better. It's like you're going to take the good and the bad and the ugly, as you said earlier. But that's what it's all about. It's that beautiful ethic. It's that beautiful moral that you can live by. But because it's actually of more value to you in bad times than in good times. When things are easy, it's easy to do everything. The essence is when things are working against somebody. How did people overcome the Holocaust? I mean, all our generations, we've had to deal with all kinds of things. We had to deal with the cruelty in Spain. And everywhere in the world, we've experienced anti-Semitism. But nonetheless, even in day-to-day life, we have to deal with difficult events and circumstances. But it's the kindness that comes out of the Torah that helps us live through and get over these difficult things. You know, it's like this terrible event we're going through now. You know, if we're kind and we're kind to other people, somewhere down the road, that kindness, we can't see that final thing of it. It's like you can never see God's face, but you can see his back. You can see where God has been involved. It's almost, I live by that. So I think the events and circumstances in history where we don't see the back of God as to why it happened, Torah.
I'm sorry, these events when we see the back of God, I'm sorry?
Then we see the consequences of God's hand. That sometimes we don't see it when it happens, but sometimes after the fact, it's almost, I don't know how to explain to you, it's like with Ruth. Ruth's a good example of that. Ultimately, after all which he went through, ultimately the hand of God revealed itself. And that's where everybody could realize that this was a wonderful woman. There was a lot of love and a lot of kindness, a lot of chesed. And that ultimately laid the foundations for the desire to have the King David and to ultimately the Mashiach. You know, maybe I'm just giving it from a very personal perspective. I'm not as knowledgeable as you are or the rabbis. But I say it in humility. I always believe in the hand of God. I believe in the hand of God. I can't always see why the hand is there. But when it reveals itself, just to me as a simple soul, I'm fortunate. I'm blessed for the many things that have happened to me in my life. The bad things that have happened, I don't understand. I don't blame God for it. I don't go through life. I'm willing to debate with God like maybe Moses did. I'm willing to debate issues with God, but always in love, never in anger.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
I think enough, Rabbi. Sorry, I get too emotional.
No, my machatenister, Mrs. Smadar Rosen's wife, she mentioned this idea that that you just mentioned that about the love. I'm sorry, I lost the thought. About difficult times, that we live in difficult times. We appreciate God, we appreciate the kindness. Yes, she said, how kind the power of kindness to revive is can't be underestimated. In other words, that through an act of kindness, they say in the camps they couldn't be very kind to each other because people had to survive. But the minute the camps were over, we were liberated, people began to share bread, and then they realized that they were human again. And that, you know, act of sharing, when you know, like Nina Katz describes, after the Holocaust, there was a woman who came to her from one of the social workers and said, "You're a bright woman. You can't just have a remedial training. You need to get a degree." And she arranged for her to get all kinds of different degrees. And when she saw that, like, her whole world was destroyed, but there was a woman who showed kindness. And then, like, That made everything better again. It brought her back to life.
Absolutely.
And so we have this Naomi. She's basically a dead woman. She's finished. She's hopeless. She's a woman with total depression. She would probably just starve to death and would be perfectly content with that. She was done. And Ruth was able to bring her back. Ruth and Boaz really brought her back to life. So it's interesting how kindness can, the power of kindness, and ultimately God's kindness, that even when we see such difficult things, when we see, then later see the kindness of God, we're just wowed by it. And somehow it makes everything not go away, but it gives a different perspective, and it makes us, you know, appreciate his love.
Sure, absolutely.
All right,
Rabbi, thank you very, very much.
Sure, thanks for joining us, and have a good Yom Tov, and okay, take care.